Simplifying Analytics, your one-stop podcast for data science, big data, descriptive, predictive, and cognitive analytics. Welcome.
Tectonic change is coming in the higher education space, putting the student at the center instead of the university will be one of the drivers for the earthquake that will take place over the next years. Hello, everyone. My name is Miguel Molina. I'm the founder of Analyticos. I want to welcome you to one of our episodes on Simplifying Analytics, where we talk about EdTech, the future of education, advanced analytics, and of course, how artificial intelligence is changing the industry. Today, we have a guest. He's one of our partners, a leading company for educational CRM in the North America space. The name of the company is Frequency Foundry. We're going to put the link for the company, for the website, on the notes. And we're being joined today by no other than Charles Finstad. Charles is the Chief Revenue Officer of Frequency Foundry, and he's going to share his perspective on the changes that he sees in the higher education space, how an educational CRM plays a key role on transforming the experience of the student. And we're going to talk about the future of education overall. We're going to talk about AI and so on. Without any further ado, welcome. Let's start.
Welcome everyone to another of our episodes. We have a special guest today. His name is Charles Finstad. And Charles, before we start jumping into our passion, which is EdTech, the future of education, to give additional context to our audience, could you share a bit more on you, on your journey, how you ended up in being part of Frequency Foundry? Who is Frequency Foundry? Who is Charles? And how did you get into education?
Right, absolutely. Well, thanks, Miguel. Thanks for having me participate. Happy to be here and happy to provide you some of that background. My story is really more sort of from the technology side, and as you know, Frequency Foundry is a Dynamics 365 partner. That's really more my background than the industry that I'm working in today in education. I've been working with Microsoft partners since the turn of the century. I joined my first Microsoft Gold partner in September of 2000, and we very quickly started doing, even before there was such a thing as Microsoft's CRM. I don't know if people remember like Microsoft CRM 1.2 or 3 or 4. We worked in that space, and we'd sort of come up through the ERP side, but we were restricted from doing business in ERP till about 2003. So when we did that, when those shackles came off, we actually got into the ERP side of Microsoft's stack. So the sort of the forerunners of D365, of the Dynamics business, the Microsoft CRM product, the Microsoft AX or Xapta products on the ERP side. That's really where I came from. My background is actually sort of a mix of technology and finance. I was an accountant for a while, so I naturally sort of gravitated into that ERP business because it was always very centered around financial transactions. I kind of made my career doing enterprise implementations and starting on the ERP side, and then more as the product evolved on the CRM side, moved into CRM. I was eventually recruited away from a relatively small but successful firm into a very large SI, where I worked for about 7 years, and I ran the Dynamics side of the business as that Microsoft platform continued to evolve. So, really, I've been doing Microsoft business application work since the very, very early 2000s. Because of where I lived, I was a resident of Calgary, Alberta, very much an energy, an oil and gas driven economy, a resource driven economy. That's really where I spent most of my formative career is in that industry. And it wasn't until I met Shaker Kadaba in 2017 now, that I started to grasp the you know, just the fascinating world of higher education. Shaker made a very compelling case to me to come and join his firm, and I did that in September of 2017. So, you know, from that portion of my career that led up to my engagement with Shaker, really, I'd been focusing more on building up my skills, my understanding of the implementation, the strategies, and the power of the Microsoft Dynamics platform. And you know, Shaker seemed like a really good fit for me with Frequency Foundry to sort of build on that skill. Although I had to change to an industry that I was pretty much unfamiliar with. So while there was a big learning curve for me on the industry side, you know, the technical foundation was there, and the understanding of how to commercialize a business around Dynamics 365. That was really the fundamentals for me.
The dynamics of every industry is different to the dynamics that you see within the educational industry. For the last 7 years, you've been in the educational space.
Yeah.
How was that movement that you had in a different sector when you moved into education? What was the biggest shock that you got?
Because I had never really worked outside sort of private commercial enterprise, I knew that there was going to be an amount of adaptation moving into public sector, into higher ed. I think literally the degree of the difference was the thing that surprised me the most. I knew that things would move slower. I knew that things would be driven more by consensus than by a hierarchy. But I guess I did not appreciate the full impact of that, right? I didn't predict in making the move that there would be as much required in terms of consensus building and relationship building around the various constituents in an opportunity in higher education as there was, and you know it taught me some good things. It taught me patience, and that patience has paid off. We actually Shaker and I have worked on opportunities that have, you know, that have literally extended for years before close. We have one opportunity with a large institution in Canada that we literally had been working for 5 years before we had our first, you know, our first deployed license and our first consulting hour doing implementations or doing onboardings for a customer. So that's not every single deal, of course, but the it was the pace that surprised me, and that doesn't mean that, you know, we were sitting around and waiting for things to happen. There was always a lot to do. There's a tremendous amount of effort involved in doing business in the higher education space. It's just that the speedometer ticks up a lot more slowly than I thought it was going to.
Would you say it's fair? It would be a fair assessment to say that the educational industry has been moving in part really slow on adopting these technologies due to this consensus?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that's absolutely the truth. You know, we still run into student information systems that are effectively redressed green screens from the 1990s. The ability, I mean, there's a couple factors, right? There's that consensus building that sort of slows things down. There's also the concept. I think people like to think of higher institutions as decentralized, and I don't think that goes far enough. I sort of think that higher ed institutions in general are anti-centralized, right? So you are, this will foreshadow a little bit of the value of our product, of our offering, but you are looking at trying to break down process silos and technology silos and data silos that exist across departments, that exist across faculties, the amount of work that you need to do to align interests, and the identification of executive sponsorship that has the ability to capture momentum and push that out to various players to make your constituents see value in sharing, in working together. I think that is a huge challenge, and I think it will continue to be, and it does cause us to still run across, you know, where did this come from? Is this, you know, this was, an SIS or another sort of core operational system that is written in a language that, you know, nobody has understood or programmed in for a decade or two. That's not nearly as unusual as you might think in higher ed. So yeah, that definitely does contribute to the lack of pace.
So taking that into account, Charles, and now that we live in, we're calling it the era of AI. So we have these two conflicting energies. No, on one side you have technologies that are outdated in a matter of speaking, but then the world is changing extremely rapidly. How do you see these two conflicting energies affecting higher education?
Well, I think the word conflict is exactly the right word. That, you know, I think about AI quite a bit, and not just because I have valued AI partners like Analyticus, but AI for me really is about pace, right? When I look at the tool set, the tool set isn't going to allow us to do anything different or anything new. It's going to allow us to do the things we were doing a lot more quickly, a lot more easily, in a much, much more automated way. And I think that flies directly in the face of the reticence of the institutions to move quickly. Which, I mean, I'm sure you read a lot of the same industry papers that I do. The amount of conflict that is being caused by the adoption of technologies, even like ChatGPT, is amazing. It is making headlines every day in higher ed. The schools, the administration, the staff, the faculty don't necessarily know how to operate in a world that is moving that quickly. There's some momentum that has to be overcome, and I honestly believe that there is a tectonic shift that's kind of coming in higher education. Right, and there are a few things that have happened that will accelerate that. You know, obviously, COVID was a massive factor in forcing at least the mentality around change. The advent of AI now, really, really becoming pervasive, and I'm looking ahead. You know, I don't know how far the countdown is now, but 18 months from now, when we start to see that that demographic wave where the number of high school students graduating is going to decline for the first time in U.S. history, there's a combination of these factors that is really going to force the shift, right? I don't want to say anything, you know, super harsh, like, you know, it's going to be an evolve or die kind of situation, but schools are going to be compelled to take a deeper look, and they will be effectively forced to adopt some of these technologies, to look at them seriously, and to increase their pace. If they don't, they will be outcompeted by schools that do, or they will be outcompeted by other modes of education that are becoming more and more popular. The concept of micro-credentialing, the fact that the tool sets are evolving faster, the tool sets we use to live and work are evolving faster than the education institutions themselves can adapt, is really going to, catalyze some change in these institutions. So I don't think it's going to be particularly easy. It will probably be traumatic for some institutions. There will be a certain amount of rationalization in the industry that's inevitable. But you know, at the end of the day, the industry will continue on, and it will look different because of these technologies.
And Charles, when you talk about these tectonic shifts and these big changes that are about to take place, something that we've heard, one of the key contributors to that change is, instead of the university being the center, the student becomes the center.
Right.
And you lead one of the top CRM companies in North America that specializes in education. And I've heard you present before talking about the full student life cycle and how that really transforms the student experience. Could you expand into what that means actually on a day-to-day basis for an institution?
Sure. I think there's a couple sort of fundamental factors that drive, you know, how we approach that concept and where the value is in the full student life cycle. Institutions traditionally have been extremely siloed in terms of the way that their data is housed and managed. And we really do work to try and act as that central aggregation point across solutions, you know, across an SIS, an LMS, a CRM. Pulling everything into one really is about establishing context for engagement, right? So within admissions or even recruiting, you know, at the front end of the cycle or advising, think about an advisor, an academic advisor who is fully informed of a student's experience. So not only are we capturing data, current data, around the student's engagement as a current student, as an enrolled student, so information coming from LMS or information coming from an ERP or an SIS, but also being able to look back in history, looking at the recruiting and the admissions cycle. When you're preparing that advisory engagement, the advantage that you have by having that full set of information through the student's experience is going to make you, it's going to make you able to tailor your offering, not just personalize your offering, right? Fill in first name, last name, and date of birth and repeat the following sentence. No, we understand more about the specifics of that student's experience, whether or not they tried for years to get into this institution, and now they're struggling in their second year, and you know they obviously look like they are dedicated to success, but they're having some sort of a struggle. In traditional solutions, you're not given that context in an advisory role, and that paradigm that can be applied to every other aspect of the student life cycle. That can be applied to recruiting. It can be applied to admissions, even on the donor and the alumni management side of things. Having the complete picture of the life cycle, having that aggregated sort of single pane of glass to look at the student's entire experience, really is going to allow you as an advisor, or you as an admissions officer, or you as somebody that's working on the foundation side, to be better informed about the way that you engage with this particular individual. And that, to us, that's the value that we go after with the product.
That's really awesome and interesting, because we've all heard the holy grail of education is personalizing education, but we always think about more into what it means from an adaptive learning aspect and not truly from the experience aspect. And I see that's the biggest value that you guys provide. So Charles, is the year 2030? It may be summer, maybe not. You wake up and somebody asks you, hey, how do you see education today? What would be your answer?
Well, you know, I know that it will not be the same industry in 2030 as it is today. I think that I really do believe that there is going to be some amount of rationalization of institutions, right? That the 4,500 or however many institutions there are operating in the U.S. today, there might not be a different number, but they will be distributed across different types of education, you know, continuing education and distance learning, polytechnics. I think you'll see the rise in those. There will always be 4-year institutions, right? They will always be there, and there will always be a market for them. But that will not be the default that everybody is going to go after. Right. I think there's enough questioning in the value of higher education and the value of a higher education today that we will cause, you know, we will cause that shift to happen. I see the institutions being aligned much, much more differently, and hopefully much, much more in keeping with what industry is demanding. I talked about that concept of the evolution of a tool set, right? And like, let's talk about the evolution of a tool set, those that are involved with artificial intelligence and machine learning. You cannot start a program today at a Cal Poly or an MIT with the idea that I'm going to learn this tool set. I'm going to come up with a creative way to deploy it. I'm going to build. By the time you get through your second term, the tool sets have evolved. They've evolved out, and you're now in a situation where you are having to teach yourself, right? You are having to micro-credential, or you're having to do your own research. Those big schools will continue to evolve, and they will provide a framework of understanding that you can hang new learnings on top of. And I think that for the 4-year institutions, that's going to be the direction. For the institutions that are going to evolve into tighter timelines, I think I think AI is going to, in particular, drive the tool set learning to a degree that we've only just started to touch on. I really do think that there will be there will be a very, very different look to the environment of institutions that we've got in 2030 as opposed to today.
So it seems the tectonic change is not going to happen this year. It's going to happen for the next 7 years. No,
I don't think it's not a discrete change, right? It is going to be a roiling process of big evolutionary steps that are going to happen one after the other. I really do think that we're going to see those changes happening from different axes, right? And maybe happening at the same time or happening in quick succession. So yeah, the earthquake is coming. It's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun indeed. Charles, it's been a pleasure. I have just one final question, which is it's rather a privacy use of your data question. And if somebody would be interested that is listening to this episode, would be interested in getting in touch with you or getting to know more about Frequency Foundry, could we share your LinkedIn link on the notes?
Absolutely. I am Charles Finstad at LinkedIn. There's only one of me so far. So I haven't been replaced by a bot yet, so that's a good sign. And you can also get me at charles@frequencyfoundry. I do answer my own emails.
Awesome, perfect. Charles, I truly appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun, and it's also really interesting that your perspective. Most of the episodes that we have are mostly focused on Spanish-speaking countries, and even though I believe the world is getting flatter and flatter, there are still some big differences between regions, and the perspective. It was really, really awesome. Thanks for sharing with us, Charles.
So happy to be here, Miguel.
Muchas gracias por habernos acompañado una vez más. De nuevo, cualquier pregunta que tengan sobre las discusiones, si quisieran que habláramos de algún tema en particular, alguna industria, algún caso de uso, déjenos saber. Nos encuentran en info@analyticus.com, también en las redes sociales, en Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Analyticus, con Y, con K y Latina. De nuevo, muchas gracias. Y hasta la próxima.
Simplifying Analytics, your one-stop podcast for data science, big data, descriptive, predictive, and cognitive analytics.